cards with a 6-9 swing, man. You can shoot the 3.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is a show for Monday, September 14th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today are two football writers who are prepared to not tell you that the season starts this week. We got Mike DeFernando.
Hey guys, what's up?
And Kyle Maestri.
What's going on, Gainesville?
All right, now we got a lot to talk about on the show today. We're going to recap the Troy game, obviously, revisit our old Gator guarantees and some foolish predictions we made for the Troy game. We're going to talk a little bit about Tennessee. You'll come back later in the week for the big show for that. And then we're going to do a couple new things, talk about some Gators in the NFL since the NFL opened up this week, and give out our weekly awards. But let's start off with the Troy game, recap that a little bit. The biggest story, probably Tebow had a breakout game. Kyle, you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, Tebow emerged as a good player this week. No, but yeah, he tore up Troy. Really one of the better games we've seen him play in a while as far as production is concerned. He threw for 4 touchdowns for the second time in his career, the first being against Kentucky in 2007. And he had his 45th career rushing touchdown, which tied Cadillac Williams for 3rd all-time on the SEC list. And I believe it was his 30th straight game with a touchdown pass. Could have been 31st, somewhere in there. But it's fun to sit in the press box and listen to this stuff, because you're getting all these impressive passing stats and rushing stats at the same time. It's not only is he throwing for 4 touchdowns and it's a 30th game in a row, but he's also now 3rd on the career rushing list. It's just, the kid's unbelievable.
Yeah. Think about how impressive the rushing stat is. Think of all the great running backs that have come through the SEC, Herschel Walker and Cadillac Williams, whoever else. That's incredibly impressive.
The most impressive thing by far about Tim Tebow is that, barring some sort of disaster, he will leave college as the SEC's all-time leading rusher in career touchdowns and all-time leader in pass efficiency.
It's unbelievable.
That's just ridiculous.
I was going to say that the number that impresses me the most is how few interceptions he throws. And, he didn't throw any this week. When was the last time he threw an interception? I'm trying to think of did he throw in the national championship game?
2.
He did throw one in the title.
Yeah, but, before that, he's thrown, 11 in his career? It's unbelievably impressive.
Yeah, he put one on the ground this week. Wasn't really his fault. I don't know. I mean, he went back to throw it. Somebody stripped it, and he fumbled. But, whatever. I mean, he made so many big plays, it didn't really matter.
Yeah, still an overly impressive game for him. He played, what, 3 full quarters in this game?
Yeah, just about 2 and 3 quarters,
Yeah, looked very good. He's in full form. He's in midseason form already.
He looked good running the ball, also. He looked healthy. He was making some nice cuts.
They ran him more than I thought they would, honestly, for the Troy game.
He ran him more than
to be fair, but I kind of expected him to, stay back and just throw, but I mean, I guess he's got to get warmed up, get used to running over some safeties again before he meets Eric Berry this coming week.
He actually looked a little bit elusive running the ball.
Yeah, he did.
Which I didn't think maybe he has so much in the past, but he was really quick out there.
I mean, he dropped the hammer on that one safety, when it came time to, so he's still got it.
Yeah, he's definitely looking good. Let's talk about a couple other guys who looked pretty good in this game. One that I will have to eat some crow about, Deontay Thompson, wide receiver, finished with 2 touchdown receptions in the game. After, though, I just want to throw this out there, he caught a ball that hit him, as far as I could tell, right in the numbers.
He did not catch the ball.
What was that?
You say he caught the ball. He hit his chest with the ball.
Yeah, he dropped the ball that hit him right in the numbers. Then he caught 2 touchdown receptions. I take everything back I said. I still don't think he's going to be that good this year, overall. But I will say Deontay Thompson can effectively catch the ball. So I was wrong about that.
There isn't a bigger Deontay Thompson apologist than me. And after he dropped that first ball in the press box, of course, all eyes were on me, as if I had just went out there and dropped the ball, much like Deontay did. But I said to Deefer, I was like, dude, he's got to catch a touchdown and make a big play, another big play for me to not look horrible here. And he got 2 touchdowns. So good job, Deontay. You save face for not only yourself but me as a journalist as well. And we'll see where he goes from here. I think he's a little above neutral now. He's a little you got to feel decent about Deontay Thompson, but he hasn't really proven anything yet.
Yeah. One other receiver we talked a little bit of smack about on the podcast before was Brandon James, who caught that over the shoulder.
B. James.
Receiver.
quote unquote receiver. He caught that over the shoulder bomb from Tebow. Looked pretty good. I feel like that's probably the only over-the-shoulder pass he's ever caught in his entire life.
Well, Mike McCall made a joke at the beginning of the season. He said over-under half a catch over-the-shoulder for Brandon James this year. And I said, oh, definitely over. He'll get at least one. So he went ahead and got that out of the way early.
So where do we stand on the receivers right now? David Nelson, once again, despite my foolish prediction, not really heavily involved. Is Riley Cooper the go-to guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is. I think he's kind of proven that he's the guy that's going to really make plays for them, get downfield. He's tall, fast. He made a really great catch in the end zone for a touchdown Saturday. I think he's definitely the go-to guy.
Also, can't keep his helmet on. I'm just throwing that out there.
Four times it came off during the game.
Unbelievable. But where's David Nelson at right now? Is he just biding his time until they need possession or
receiver? Coaching the other wide receivers.
Yeah.
Baby G is what they call him because he's like a mini Billy Gonzalez. That's the joke. But, I don't know. All the receivers aren't too impressive, really. It's all about the running game this year. Okay. Tebow and those two running backs. But I don't know. Riley's done really well, but he's kind of always had a reputation for killing bad teams. So this is kind of just in line with that as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, if he starts putting up big games against SEC opponents, I'll definitely say, you know, he's done a good job. And he certainly does a lot of different things well. Like, he runs deep routes well. He runs the sideline routes well. He blocks downfield. So, I mean, if nothing else, he's a strong contributor, even if he doesn't end up being, like, the go-to guy on the offense.
All right, let's talk about those running backs a little bit. I know you're itching to talk about Jeff Dempse. What did you see out of them? You know, Randy got some more carries. Tebow ran the ball a little bit more balanced, except for Moody. What do we see out of the running backs this week?
The usual display of elusiveness and explosiveness for Jeff Dempse, who had about 90 yards on 7 carries. Jeff Dempse is great. But let's talk about Chris Rainey a little bit because he really, I think he showed a lot of people that he can run the ball a little tough, a little tougher than people think. He put his head down and just, you know, picked up some extra yards at the end of plays that were pretty impressive. But I did say this, and I think you might agree with me here. Once a defender has Chris Rainey, he gets tossed around. Yeah. Like, there were multiple times where somebody just, like, grabbed him and just, like, threw him wherever they wanted to because he weighs nothing. Like, he's super light compared to everybody else out there.
Yeah, he is slight of build, but, I mean, he is super tough for how small he actually is. I think he's, like, 180 pounds, but he ran right up the middle. I mean, it's Troy, but still, he's running right up the middle on these teams. He pounds the ball, like, pretty good for his size. I think he's probably the better, like, true running back than Jeff Dempse. I know you're going to disagree with this, and Jeff Dempse is the man and all, but I think he's tougher in between the tackles. He's got a little more moves, not quite as fast. But
just because no one touches Jeff Dempse doesn't mean he's not as tough, okay? He's just so fast that he'd rather just run around you and run in a touchdown.
I mean, they're definitely a good complement to each other.
Yeah, Randy sort of showed that he can grind it out a little bit, you know, between the tackles. And you said it's just Troy. Troy has a very good defensive line. Those two defensive ends they had, especially, was it Brandon Lang? Was like top 15 in sacks and tackles for loss. So he wasn't doing it against scrubs exactly. I don't know how good their linebacking core was, but still a sign, you know, of improvement that they don't have to bring in Moody to run in between the tackles, which, let's be honest, they weren't going to bring in Moody to run in between the tackles anyway.
Speaking of which, Moody had a costly fumble against Troy. I think we're not going to see a whole lot of Manuel Moody for a while.
Yeah. But back to them running between the tackles, they've been running them both between the tackles a lot because they've been doing that little, like, option give play where, you know, Tebow has the option of letting them have it up the middle or, you know, pulling it out, taking it himself. Maybe there's a pass option on some plays. But both of them have been running up the middle a lot. I mean, they usually end up breaking it to the outside because they're both so fast, but and, you know, they can turn the corner on people. But both of them have hit holes in the middle. It's not like they're just catching sweeps and pitches and stuff like that. So I think they've shown that they can do stuff like that, and they don't need a guy like Moody. And, you know, Moody did put one on the ground, but, I mean, it's not a big deal. Everyone fumbles every once in a while.
Rainey, not the running back, but, like, it was raining outside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Tebow fumbled. Who else fumbled? There were a million fumbles. There were 3 lost fumbles, so who else lost a fumble? I'm drawing a blank here.
Not impressive of us, but...
Did Aaron Hernandez lose one?
I don't remember, honestly.
All right. I can't think of who put it on the ground, but they lost fumbles, 3 fumbles for sure.
It's not just
and I
Moody
think there were 6 fumbles all in all. I know David Nelson kind of like fumbled one out of bounds. Yeah. I think Riley Cooper fumbled one out of bounds. Mm-hmm. So it was a sloppy game, if for nothing else in the weather. So I don't read too much into Moody putting one on the ground.
Yeah, I wouldn't take anything too much of that. But was Moody like played after that fumble at all?
I don't think he was. And it's kind of sad because he was getting some like decent carries early in the game, something he hadn't really done in the past. And I think he's on such a short leash with Meyer that one mistake, especially Meyer's big on fumbles, so like one mistake that could really cost him.
I mean, he checked in before Rainey did in this game, which is surprising to me. But I mean, it's it's competition within your own team. When the other two guys who play your position are just getting in there and busting huge runs seemingly every time they touch the ball, you can't go in there and just rip off five-yard runs and put the ball on the ground. You got to do something impressive. You got to make some plays. He looked good against Charleston Southern, but he didn't do it this week. So, you know, it's going to be a week-to-week basis, I guess. You know, if you don't look good, you're not going to play. They have a lot of other options. You don't have to ride out a Keystone Moore, a Deshaun Wynn, or somebody like that anymore. You just get him out of there and go to the next guy. So. Yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk about something on the other side of the ball then. We've talked a lot about the safety situation here. You know, joke that they say they have three starters, but you can't possibly have three starters. Urban found a way to have three starters. Kyle, talk about this Joker 3-3-5 package.
Yeah, they played the 3-3-5 for the entire time they left their starters in there, so about 2.5 quarters. They played it some with the backups too, but not exclusively. And what it was 3-3-5, meaning three linemen, three linebackers, and five defensive backs. So they played their two normal cornerbacks, Joe Hayden, Janoris Jenkins, and they played all three of the safeties. Ahmad Black and Major Wright played deep, and Will Hill moved up and covered the slot receiver for pretty much the whole game, also giving them the option to bring him on a blitz, move him into the box or the run, stuff like that. Linebackers were the three you would expect, and then on the defensive line, this is the most surprising thing to me, was that Justin Tratow, who's a defensive end, moved inside and played nose tackle in this formation, which I didn't see coming at all, hasn't been talked about even the slightest. So apparently he did it last year when they ran the Joker package too, but I don't know how often they did that, and it's going forward, it's probably going to be something they use almost only in passing situations, like third and longs and stuff like that, because it gives you a lot of different blitz looks with the linebackers coming in off the edge or inside, but and three good down pass rushers on the line. So they look great in the package, but I mean, it was Troy again, so.
Yeah, I mean, with all their defensive backs, and their strength is really their speed in the secondary, and I think this is a way they really capitalize on that, and I think that Urban's talking about playing the three safeties and they had all these starters. I think this is a formation that you're going to see more than I think we even expect to. I think it's a way, maybe they even go like half the time they're in this formation to really capitalize on that.
I don't know about that. You're definitely, this is the fastest team they can put out there. You know, Urban Meyer, we all know, is obsessed with speed. And this is easily the fastest team you can put out there with all the defensive backs and a defensive end playing inside. But against a team who has a good, like, you know, power running game, like, I'd be scared to run this against, like, Charles Scott and LSU or a team like that where, you know, they're just going to pound it up the middle on you. And there's almost really no reason to run it in that situation. So against a team where you have them overmatched in the running game and you know their running back can't hurt you, you might as well just take away the pass also because you know that no matter what you do, you're going to stop the run. But I think for Tennessee, we won't see it as much because their passing game is just horrible. Yeah. It'll stop itself. And then you can just put, you know, 7-8 guys in the box on every play, load it up, and tackle those running backs who are actually pretty talented.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if they ran a little bit against Tennessee, though, just to completely put Jonathan Crofton on his back, you know, just terrified. He'll force some interceptions as if you weren't going to throw them anyway.
I mean, third and longs, I think they'll definitely switch to stuff like this, or maybe they'll go like one set of downs, they'll run it, but it definitely won't be the base formation this week, I don't think. If it is, then we'll have to look at this being like their base formation going forward, I guess. Then, you know, what they've been saying about it isn't true, that it's just like to rush the passer. It's something they like for more than that reason, so.
Hmm. All right, well then, I guess that's pretty much the main stuff from the Troy game. It was a blowout. It's, you know, a repeat of week one. The preseason is over. The real season, quote-unquote, starts next week, as all the talking heads are saying. But, yeah, look forward to that next week. Let's revisit our Gator guarantees, though, from the Troy Preview podcast. I'll go ahead and confess to being wrong myself. I said Jeff Temps and Chris Rainey would run for 200 yards and 4 touchdowns combined. I was all up on that Kool-Aid during that podcast. They ran for, I believe, net yards 172 and 2 touchdowns. So I almost got the yards, and I was halfway there to the touchdowns, but yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. I wanted to say something outrageous, and I certainly did.
You could have been further off. It wasn't too embarrassing. Not the worst thing we heard last week.
Speaking of which, let's talk about Phil Kegler's prediction. Phil said that Emmanuel Moody would lead the team in rushing. I believe he said, you know, about 12 carries, 125 yards. Didn't work out so much for Phil or Emmanuel Moody, so we're 0-2 at this point. I'm going to go ahead and get another one that could be wrong out of the way. Mike McCall said at least one UF football player will get swine flu. That is yet to be determined. So, you know, check back later for that. I don't know. And then somebody who was surprisingly right, you know, overall, Bobby Colovi said Janoris Jenkins, back from suspension, would get an interception. He did. He said Deontay Thompson would get a touchdown, spitting in my face. He did. But he foolishly said that Deontay Thompson would get over 100 yards receiving. He did not. So Bob's 2 out of 3, 2 very good calls. I think we called a win on the week.
Yeah, definitely. And he could definitely make the excuse that if Deontay didn't pull up lame with a hamstring injury, he would have racked up some more yards. So I think Bob did a solid job for sure.
Better than the rest of us for sure. Put us all to shame, especially definitely. Me so, and Phil, of course. All right, let's move on then. Let's talk about the big topic for this week. You know, it's what they're pretty much turned their attention to right after the game. It's certainly what the media turned its attention to after the game. Let's talk about Tennessee a little bit. What's the anticipation been like that within the team?
I mean, I think we got some audio from James Wilson in a little bit, but it's obviously the thing they've been circling on their calendar since the summer. They got signs hanging in the locker room. Wayne Kiffin's quotes are blown up everywhere. I mean, there's been the whole Kiffin-Meyer like firestorm. So it's obviously the thing that's been like building up the entire season.
All right, let's take a listen to that James Wilson audio, actually. This was Sunday night at practice, Kyle? Right?
Yeah, Sunday night practice. Offensive lineman, left guard, James Wilson, came on in, sat down with the media. He's the only person in the room, and hilarity ensued.
Just practicing, really, being able to go, not being hurt, and just going hard and having fun, enjoying it.
Are players talking at all about what Kiffin said about Meyer, about him?
Oh, it's all over our locker room and everything. You know, that's something you don't forget. And we just look at it like, you know, it's another thing to back up and just prove them wrong.
Are there signs or what's it?
Oh, yeah, the quote from that press conference, singing Rocky Top all night and all that. That's good motivation for us.
What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like Saturday?
It's going to be wild. We're definitely getting ready.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a show.
What does that mean, getting ready? What do you?
Attention to details a lot more, and especially when you get an SEC play like Coach talked about.
How badly does that make you want to shut a team up when a coach talks a lot like that?
It's huge, especially I've actually committed to Lane Kiffin when I committed to USC first.
Oh wow!
And so he says that now, it gets me excited.
So tell us about your relationship with him.
I talked to him before I talked to Coach Carroll out there, and I thought he was a nice guy, but he definitely, I don't know what he was thinking when he said all that. Kind of hit a nerve.
Why did you commit to him? What did you like about him?
When I decided to go to USC, he was the first coach I talked to, and he recruited my area, so.
At what point did things really ramp up? I mean, was it today? Was it last night after the game? Yesterday after the game? Was it? At what point did you guys feel a difference that it's Tennessee? And
we've just been counting down since workouts. We have a sign in the weight room. It's just how many days till Tennessee. It's just really SEC play is huge for us.
Did he do anything during the recruiting process at USC that kind of turned you off at all? Or?
No. I have nothing bad to say about Coach Kiffin. It's just, you know, he's lining up against his team. So
his comments have struck a nerve with everybody on this team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just backing up. We don't like to listen to that stuff, but it's just another, it just adds to the rivalry.
Thanks, guys.
Did you follow the new Keith Richardson thing?
Yeah, they're kidding me.
All right, so there are a couple funny things about this or cool things about this. One is some media relations people have said that all the signs have been taken down because there are people who took pictures of them over the summer because the media was let into the locker room because they redid it and stuff, so people saw it and took pictures. And then we've been all told that they've been taken down since then, but obviously it's not true. And A.J. Jones, linebacker, also confirmed later in an interview that there's stuff all over the place and that there's signs everywhere. So we're pretty much lied to about that. Then the two things I like about what James Wilson said was when one of the guys, the AP writer, Mark Long, asked him, when did the intensity for this game start to pick up? Like, and then totally gave him an out. He's like, you know, was it after the game ended the other day? Was it today at practice? When was it? And he was like, oh, we've been counting down since workouts. Like, pretty much just throwing completely, like, just throwing it out there that they have been looking ahead the whole time. Like, completely destroying the cliche of, like, we take it one week at a time. We got Charleston Southern and Troy. Like, they were just thinking about Tennessee this whole time, he pretty much admits. And then by far the best is the very end when you can hear the media relations person trying to get him out of the room at that point because he's done so much damage. And Ben Volin from the Palm Beach Post squeezes in one last question about Newkeese Richardson, and James Wilson on his way out just says, "They kidnapped him," and walks out of the room.
That's the greatest, like, 2.5 minute interview I've ever heard. Like, that's exceptional what he did there. Have we talked about the Newkeese Richardson thing on this podcast? Should we explain that, give the listeners a little bit of context? Deefer, do you want to?
Yeah, okay. Newkeese Richardson is a receiver from Pahokee High School here in Florida, and he was a long-time commitment to Florida, like, for, like, a year, I think, for, like, a very long time. And I think it was, like, was it signing day?
On signing day,
he, like, switched his commitment and signed with Tennessee, mm-hmm. seemingly out of nowhere. Then during, like, the day after signing, Lane Kiffin was doing, like, a brunch for boosters and stuff, and he made the comment that Urban Meyer called him while he was on his visit to Tennessee and committed a recruiting violation. This, however, is not true. Kiffin apologized, but nonetheless, there was some controversy over that. So for the last, you know, few months, we've been wondering what happened to Newkeese Richardson. Finally, we know he was kidnapped.
James Wilson solved the mystery.
Lane Kiffin pulled up with a van, and people just jumped out, pulled him in, and that's it. On your way to Knoxville.
That's how he pulls in those prize recruits. No secondary violations here. It's just pure kidnapping, according to James Wilson. Let's talk a little bit more about this, though, because, you know, we have heard the party line, the company line is 1 week at a time. Every SEC game is the same. We don't look forward to anything in particular, despite this entire summer full of Lane Kiffin is just, you know, starting fires and stoking flames everywhere. You know, they tried to play it cool, like, there's no big deal about this game. Clearly there is. The players know there is. You think the coaches will game plan like there is. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
I mean, they can say whatever they want publicly. We all know that's not the case, though. We all know that they've been talking about this for months, like, since this all went down. I think that Tennessee's this year's Georgia game, Meyer's very big on revenge and, like, getting back at people. I think they've been playing for this game for months.
Well, James Wilson destroyed stories everywhere because everyone was planning on writing, like, the tight-lipped angle because, especially after the game last week, Justin Tratow dropped a no comment on us about Tennessee, which is, like, just like Georgia last year. So that was kind of everyone's story, is like, it's happening again. It's the big story. It's the two coaches going against each other and no one's saying anything and they're just going to smash them on the field and say something. And then James Wilson came out and just blew the doors off of that. So I think it is like the Georgia game in that it's personal and they're out for blood, but apparently they're talking about it, or at least some of them are, which is different than last year because there was an absolute gag order on the week of Georgia game last year.
That's what I was going to ask. Does that keep up for the rest of this week? Is anybody saying anything remotely controversial about it?
No. We'll never see James Wilson again.
That may be true. Yeah, I don't think James, like, opened the door for everyone else to just say whatever they want. Yeah. I think they probably got a talking to about how, you know, we're going to keep this in-house, and there's a sign in the media room, like, where they watch film, where we also do interviews after the games and stuff, where the press conferences are held. It's something like, what we say here, what we see here, stays here when we leave here, almost word for word. So pretty much, like, nothing leaves this room. And like, that's a policy they want to convey, not go out there and tell them about all the motivational stuff we have hanging all over our locker room.
I think this is going to be just like last year's Miami game after Lewis Murphy, you know, made the whole "we're the real you" comment, and then the rest of the week there was nothing.
Right.
I think James Wilson gave us his "we're the you" comment, and now they're done.
That's the thing. I'm afraid this is going to be taken so far to, like, counteract what James Wilson has started here, that by, like, Wednesday or so, you're going to get some player who comes out, "I didn't realize we were playing Tennessee this week. Who's their coach there? I didn't realize." It's going to get ridiculous. I think you see the gag order heightened toward the end of the week. But last time that happened, as you said, was Georgia, and Georgia got a pretty stern beatdown, and Urban rubbed that in, a little salt in the wound, as much as he could.
And I expect the exact same thing to happen this weekend. There'll be a beatdown and much salt rubbing into wounds, but I'm not sure how he's going to do it. I think he'll do something different than the timeouts.
Oh,
we'll see a new way to you know, show up the opponent. I'm not sure what it'll be yet. Maybe it's like the walk-ons just start running in touchdowns or something like that. You know, like
Kate Holliday just balls.
Yeah. Kate Holliday and Joey Sorrentino line up.
Chris Scott. We got Chris Scott a touchdown today.
So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to keep an eye out for. But Tennessee, even at this point, like, they can't be confident coming into this game. They lost 19-15 to UCLA. Just a brutal,
at home,
and just a brutal offensive performance because Jonathan Crompton is just a bad quarterback. I mean, they can't have any confidence coming into this, right?
I mean, Crompton threw three picks and fumbled the ball, I think, all in the first half against UCLA. So, I mean, they can't be confident in him.
Yeah. I have a friend at Tennessee who said he was has an early September birthday. He said he was anticipating September 19th more than his own birthday. That talk died off just a little bit after this weekend when he said he's thinking about selling his tickets because the offense is so bad for Tennessee. So I don't even think Tennessee fans believe anymore.
It's going to be a beatdown, and I know it's not Gator guarantee time, but I'm predicting a shutout this weekend. Mm. I think they're going to be so motivated, and that's the absolute goal. That's the best way to embarrass someone is literally just shut them out. So I'm going to go shutout for Tennessee this weekend. I know that's crazy. They haven't shut out Charleston Southern or Troy, but I think they leave the starters in a lot longer, and that is, like, what they want to do. That's what they're going to be focused on.
I think that's well within their own possibility. I think the only way Tennessee does not get shut out is if they do the smart thing and play Eric Berry at quarterback. I think that's the only way they, like, prevent the beatdown is they get their best player the ball.
But. Or if Eric Berry gets the ball for himself by intercepting Tim Tebow like he did in 2007, gets a pick six. That's the only way they could score.
I mean, that's more likely than Crompton throwing a touchdown pass. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on. Do something that was suggested by a listener, actually, in an email. True example of how much we appreciate all the comments we get. We got an email about this, and we're going to do it on the show. Asked for some more, you know, analysis and commentary about Gators in the NFL, which is obviously a great idea. You know, the fans still care about that. So let's talk about one, you know, recent Gator now in the NFL making his NFL regular season debut. Percy Harvin with the Minnesota Vikings had 157 all-purpose yards and receiving touchdown. I think Brett Favre's first passing touchdown of the season. He's another trivia question answer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Pretty good game for him. I think he had 50-odd receiving yards and 30 or so.
I think 30-odd receiving and 20-odd rushing or vice versa.
No, it was definitely 22 rushing because he had two rushes of 11 yards each.
There you go.
But then on the returns, I think that's like that's one place he's going to fit in great in the NFL.
I mean, they're putting the ball in his hands as much as they can, obviously. I mean, he's touching it on three phases of the game. So Percy Harvin's clearly going to be a big part of what the Vikings do this year.
It's something funny to see, though, because he was just sort of like shut down by a lot of the people. So, oh, another Florida receiver, you know, just write him off.
All right, here's my knock on Percy, though. I'm not sure you guys watched the touchdown, but very, very weak celebration afterwards. Not a lot of style. I know it's his first game in the NFL, but he needs to get with some guys, really come up with something better than what he
got
did.
Run over by Brett Favre. Yeah,
he got bum rushed
by a 40-year-old.
I was expecting him to do the Pedro Martinez ole, like just gently place him down like Don Zimmer. You don't want to hurt the guy. He's fragile, but
yeah, Brett Favre, he's like a kid out there once he gets excited.
Like enthusiasm. There you go, Brett.
Yeah, I see Percy being a very prominent part of that offense, very prominent part of that team for the rest of the season, much to my despair since I have Bernard Berrien on my fantasy team as starting receiver.
Not so hot.
No, zero catches. Fun fact.
Well, Favre only threw for 110 yards. So.
Unspectacular, I believe, is the word.
Harvin's quote after the game was really good. It was something like, I thought we were going to chest bump or something, but he just ran at me or something like that. Like, he's just confused by the whole thing.
Generation guy.
Favre doesn't understand.
Tebow would have chest bumped him.
You got a pat. If you want it on the chest, you pat the chest. Sometimes I want the side bump, so they'll pat on the side. Yeah. You know, it's like signaling. You got to connect with your teammates. So.
I mean, Brett Favre doesn't get along with his teammates very well, as we've obviously
seen. He's out of touch with the youth culture.
Doesn't communicate. But could Brett Favre be his dad?
Brett Favre is so, like, the gray hair on Brett Favre is just incredible.
Brett Favre is 40. Percy Harvin's, what, 21?
Brett Favre can certainly be Percy Harvin's father. He's certainly old enough to be.
Unbelievable.
I think he has a daughter who's like almost Percy Harvin's age. He's like in high school, like senior in high school.
Yeah. I don't know. It's getting. We could have a father son combination in the NFL with how old Favre is.
All right, let's talk about another former Florida receiver on the former teammate of Percy's. Lewis Murphy is going to be making an NFL start tonight at 10 for the Raiders against the Chargers. He's going to be starting alongside in that receiving corps.
I think might not be starting alongside Darius Heyward-Bey, who I think may have gotten beaten out here for the second job. So it's pretty remarkable that Murphy's in the position he's in. We'll see how good he does, but they like speed. He's pretty fast, and he probably runs – he's a little more polished maybe than Heyward-Bey.
It's unfortunate Jamarcus Russell's throwing him the ball.
Or not throwing him the ball, depending on how you look at it.
He's throwing the Chargers the ball as Lewis Murphy runs fly routes and post routes. Heyward-Bey was drafted three rounds in front of Murphy, three, four rounds.
Well, Heyward-Bey was first, and
he was the first receiver taken.
Murphy was fourth round, so three rounds.
Unbelievable.
Well, even more remarkable, I made this joke, I don't remember in what capacity before, but Al Davis ruined two drafts simultaneously. Not only did he ruin his own draft by taking Darius Heyward-Bey, but he also left the Niners with Michael Crabtree, who was upset and couldn't be consoled, so he's demanding that he get paid like the first receiver taken, even though he wasn't the first receiver taken. So he hasn't been in camp yet, he's not signed. He, like, opening day came and went without Michael Crabtree for the 49ers, and I mean, if I'm a Niners fan, I just couldn't be more upset about that. Al Davis completely just ruined two teams at once.
He's destroying the NFL at this point. He's just going team by team. He's going to just take out young talent going on.
He's actually branching out into other teams in his own, though, which is like, it's just impressive, really.
Not even mad.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed.
Maybe this was his plan the whole time. He's like, all right, we don't want Crabtree. Yeah. He's like, and I don't really like any of the other players in this draft either. But if we take another receiver in front of him, then Crabtree won't play in the NFL this year. He was thinking about this all along.
I'm sure. It wasn't just senility taking over. It was actually a very well-thought-out plot by Al Davis. Let's go talk about a couple other former Gators. Reggie Nelson, who you'll be hearing referenced later in the show for being great. Started off the season with 7 tackles, I think third on the team. You know, he's
doing what he
does.
You can
do no wrong.
He's a constant back there.
Eraser.
Yeah, eraser. Good stuff. Another defensive player, former Gator, Javon Curse, had a sack. Oops, I mean, I'm surprised he's still kicking around. Still
freak.
Effective. Yeah, the freak. Still very effective guy running off the edge there. Mm-hmm. Another guy, former receiver who sometimes gets Florida receivers a bad name, Jabbar Gaffney. I think he's the third, fourth, fifth receiver for the Broncos. Personal favorite of Mike DiFerdinando for his once famous throat-slashing gesture. That, what was it? Took over the Catholic Youth League?
Throat-slash against Tennessee 2000.
All right, there
you
go.
How was that received in the Catholic Youth League?
Yeah.
Not well. It was a talking to.
Gaffney actually finished with 3 receptions for 25 yards from the one and only Kyle Orton, who, you know, better than Jay Cutler this week at least.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about another former receiver who had a surprising week. I was really, you know, surprised to learn that he was getting this many touches, much less that he was doing this much with it. Andre Bubba Caldwell, 11 receptions, 78 yards, 5 rushes, 53 rushing yards for the Bengals. I did not see that coming at all.
The rushes surprised me. Yeah. If you've been watching Hard Knocks, as Brett and McCall have been relentlessly at my house going through all the episodes, they've been telling me how sweet Bubba is and how he's going to get some playing time and be like, you know, a factor in the offense, and they were proven right. They obviously are trying to get him the ball. And Chris Henry might not be the steal we all thought he was.
Enjoy. Then one other guy who had another just a great week, maybe the best week out of all these guys, you know, you could argue Percy, former linebacker Mike Peterson for the Falcons, had 7 tackles, 1 forced fumble playing against the Dolphins.
Our Miami Dolphins.
And had 1 interception. So just a dominating performance defensively. I think he was here in the late 90s, early 2000s, linebacker, just one of the traditional, one of the great linebackers at Florida. Obviously still making his job done in the NFL.
Anthony Fasano is just terrible. He fumbled twice as a tight end. If you're a tight end, you can't fumble twice.
No.
Like, we're just waiting until Pat White finally breaks out and becomes the starting quarterback.
And the first fumble, if you guys watched that game, they ran, like, the sweetest play ever, where Ronnie Brown, like, takes the end around or takes a sweep going left, pitches it, throws it back to Chad Pennington with his left hand. He's a left-hander. Across his body, and then Pennington hits a wide-open receiver downfield. So, like, they got all the momentum. They're in the red zone. Things are happening, and then Peterson jacks up Fasano, and the ball goes the other way.
There you go. One other former Gator in action tonight at 7, Fred Taylor, running back for the New England Patriots. I don't know where he fits into that running back mess there, but I feel like he's number one on the depth chart at this point.
I mean, at worst, he'll see, you know, split carries with Maroney and Falk, who's more of like the third down catch the screens guy. So
maybe Kevin Falk still
ageless.
Kicking around.
Scotty Reynolds, like, ageless.
Kevin Falk is a Steve Kerr of the NFL. Let me just say, he's got one job, he does it well, yeah. And you can just count on him year after year.
That's the thing. He's been like the you know, the prototypical third down running back since like before third down running backs were in vogue.
Yeah.
Like they are now. Like, he started a trend quietly and is still keeping it up. Very impressive for Kevin Falk. But yeah, Fred Taylor's going to be competing for carries and touches with him tonight. I think that's it for the Gators in the NFL. We're going to try to do this every week, especially if somebody does something noteworthy like Percy or Mike Peterson. So keep checking back for that and let us know if you want to hear more or less, in any case, about these Gators in the NFL.
Less. Too many Gators in the NFL.
Too many former Florida players making their names known in the NFL. So let's move on to our weekly awards, our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. Let's start off with our Reggies this week.
Sure.
All right, Kyle, you want to start us off? You're enthusiastic about that.
Sure. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. This is what I've been waiting for the last half an hour.
What we came for.
All right, my Reggie goes to Vegas odds makers for opening up the line for the Tennessee game at 28.5. That was pretty much the standard across most, you know, betting sites and most casinos for the Tennessee game. a lot of people were saying, you know, when we were kicking around the idea beforehand that that was too many points and, like, it'll come in around, like, 21 or 20 or 19 or something like that. That would have been just way too small and everyone would have made a ton of money on that. So they went big. They went for 28.5, and I think that's a much more fair spread. So I was pleased that they did the right thing, even though it'll, you know, hurt some gamblers out there.
All right, well, I'm giving my Reggie Nelson Award to Purdue running back Ralph Bolden this week. He's a late pickup for me last week in our fantasy, Alligator Fantasy League.
He's a great man. Now, I picked him up, too.
Here's the situation. Me and Kyle were playing each other in fantasy this week. We were both having very subpar leagues.
As usual. Juice Williams, my third-round steal.
Anyway, so it comes around 11 o'clock, rolls around Saturday. I've got one player who hasn't played, Ralph Bolden. Yeah, I'm losing to Kyle at this point, but only by a few points. Bolden comes through for me big time. 3 touchdowns, 2 rushing and receiving, 200 yards rushing. I end up winning by like 84 to 70 something.
Yeah. Overkill, I'd say.
Escape with the victory. So Ralph Bolden, thank you.
Actually, I picked up Ralph Bolden in my non-Alligator Fantasy College League, and he's done great things for me. My running backs are unstoppable. I'd say I could beat most teams just with my running backs. I've got Jacquez Rogers from Oregon State.
You also have Jacquez Rogers.
Jacquez, yeah, my bad. and Ralph Bolden, so I'm doing great there. And once my receivers come back from bye weeks and or swine flu, I'm going to be in good shape.
I sort of throw this out there. I have Charles Scott in my Alligator League, and he has been nothing but horrible the first 2 weeks of this season. Yeah. No touchdown, no 100 yards. I'm considering dropping him.
Wow. Could be worse. You could have drafted Jermaine Grisham in the second round of both of your leagues, who was out for the season, never played a snap.
I believe Evan Drexler, who used to work here with us, and I'm in that league with him, and he had Sam Bradford and Jermaine Gresham.
Wow.
Didn't work out too well for him.
Not going anywhere.
He's already asking when hockey season's going to roll around, so take that into perspective. It's time to get happy for me, because I got 3 Reggie Nelson Awards to give out this week.
Oh, my God.
One of them is, you know, more out of shame than anything else. I got to give it to Deontay Thompson, proving me wrong. Kyle's pumping his fist, proving him right. So, Deontay Thompson, you can catch the ball. Congratulations. If you can keep it up, you'll keep getting Reggie Nelson Awards. I don't think you can, but prove me wrong, Deontay. Prove
He'll
me
take
wrong.
That as a personal challenge. I'm Your sure quote will be up in the locker room next week, right next to Lane Kiffin.
They don't have any quotes up in the locker room. They took those down in the preseason. Don't worry about that. My second one is going to go to Drew Brees. You want to talk about Ralph Bolden as your fantasy savior. Drew Brees is the man, as far as I'm concerned. 6 touchdowns. Unbelievable game. I mean, he did it against the Lions, and they're terrible, but I mean, just I told my roommate at one point he had 4, and it was before I had to come to work. I said, if he gets 6, I'm just going to do cartwheels all the way to work. So look out on University Avenue. I'll be the guy wearing a Drew Brees jersey doing cartwheels down University Avenue. I did not, but I was impressed nonetheless, and that's why I'm giving him one of my Reggies. And then my third one is in relation to something I was doing this weekend. I went down to Tampa to cover Florida volleyball in the Tampa Twice tournament, where they beat hometown USF and fell. I was swept by number 3 Washington in a dominating performance by the Huskies, I got to say. But I got to give props to a couple of Florida volleyball fans who made that trip. And despite that terrible, terrible home crowd there, these guys, they stood their own. They made their impact felt there. One guy dressed up like a matador when they were playing the Bulls, which was, you know, it was cute, I guess. But it was funny the way they were interacting. And any guys who are going to travel for volleyball on a Friday and then Saturday night, you got to give some props to. And then that's pretty much it for my Reggie. Do you want to do Kyle's now?
Sure. Somebody else want to start?
All right, Deifer.
All right, well, I'm going to give my Kyle to Ohio State football this week. Ohio State football lost to USC, obviously, but for whatever reason has taken away some kind of pride from this loss. They're at the point now where not getting blown out by a ranked team is somehow a moral victory. I think that speaks volumes about their program.
Oh, there you go. I mean, Matt Barkley, though, he turned into John Elway on that last drive, so how can you stop that?
You can't.
You sound so resigned. You can't stop a freshman quarterback making his, what, second career start?
Second and 19 from the 5. Like three quarterback sneaks, I think.
Sneaks.
Joe McKnight just killing people.
Yeah, Joe McKnight was great on
Really the track. Player of the game is Joe McKnight.
Correct.
Terrell Pryor should move to wide receiver, by the way. I've been saying this since last season. I really believe it. He's not a good quarterback and could probably be a factor at wide receiver.
Terrell Pryor, who I threw out as a dark horse Heisman candidate. Yeah. So anybody who took that one to the bank, have fun with that. I apologize once again. I guess I'll give out my Kyle next then, also about my trip to Tampa, since that's how I spent my entire weekend. Left Gainesville and the football game for that. I'm going to give it to USF volleyball fans and their commentator. I want to start talking about the commentator. This guy broke out a run of cliches unlike anything I haven't heard since sixth, seventh grade. The last time I heard the roof is on fire, maybe eighth grade. I don't know. But this guy used it repeatedly. It was unbelievable. And I found out he was, you know, somehow related to the USF staff or something. So just horribly biased. Anytime Florida would do anything, he would whisper it into the microphone. Wouldn't say who got the kills or the assists or anything, the blocks. A little frustrating to me, but the fans were probably worse than the commentator as well. Just the most merciless, ruthless group of individuals I've ever seen when it comes to college volleyball. I couldn't get over just how personally they were taking everything and how much they were insulting. They were insulting just pretty much every player who stepped on the court, which I think you could see it sort of when talking to the volleyball players at Florida. They sort of took a little more pride in being that kind of crowd as well as a team like USF. But yeah, that's my two awards.
I have very strong feelings about male fans heckling female players. Mm. I really don't like it at all. I hate it, in fact.
Yeah.
I think you have no business heckling women's sports. Beaver?
I mean, really?
Yeah. You think
just
it's
because
cool?
They're women?
Yeah, pretty much.
What happened to equality?
Whatever did happen to equality,
like, they're not
deeper.
Heckling them for being like women. They're just
in this case they were.
In this case, like, they were insulting like their physical appearance and like how they look.
It's the Joakim Noah, you're ugly, except on the women's side.
I don't agree with that, but if they want to heckle them for being bad or whatever,
that's negotiable.
Physical things cross the line.
Heckling based on like performance on the court, like, you can't really do anything about that. Like, if you don't want to get heckled, play well or play better, but like, you can't do anything about how you look in that case, and like, you should never be subjected to that kind of punishment.
And what kind of man are you, like, out there just like tearing apart women? Like, who does that? I don't understand. Like, it's like hitting your sister.
USF fans, you have no football team to take real pride in.
Completely ridiculous. Like, that upsets me. Even I get very I feel very strongly.
I was right in front of him. I was just getting angry the entire match. Although I did laugh when somebody joked about if they still had any Matt Groth is greater than or equal to Tim Tebow shirts lying around.
Mm-hmm.
I let out a chuckle when they had that.
Greater than or equal to. Multiple choice.
So that was fun. But yeah, those are my Kyles.
All right, my Kyle is going to go to Lane Kiffin. It's not the first one he's earned on the show. Probably won't be the last either. But this time he gets it for, in my opinion, ensuring that the Gators will absolutely slaughter his team on Saturday. The best way to try to take a win away from the Swamp is to sneak in under the radar, act like you're not a threat, play possum, and then, next thing you know, the Gators are in a dogfight with an Auburn or Ole Miss team that wasn't supposed to be in it from the start. And that's the best way to do it. Fly in under the radar and then just make a statement with your team. The way not to do it is to fire up the opposing sideline as much as humanly possible, ensuring that they'll be extra focused and work extra hard to embarrass you. Not just beat you, but embarrass you. That's exactly what Lane Kiffin's done, and his players may not thank him too much for it after 60 minutes of football with the Gators.
His team also pulled back the curtain, and the fact that, you know, like, they could have been a sleeper. No, they went out and lost to UCLA. Any, like, upset potential they had is, like, a sleeper, decent team, completely gone when you can't put up more than 15 points against UCLA at home.
Yeah, the UCLA loss really hurt them, but I think Kiffin kind of did a good thing. He went about it horribly wrong, but I think going out there...
A good thing for who?
For his team, because I think...
Is it?
The Tennessee program is, like, pretty much stagnant towards the end under Fulmer. You know, I really like Fulmer. I think it was pretty much stagnant. They weren't really going anywhere. They were kind of, like, you know, reveling in mediocrity. I think Kiffin came in and said, you know what, we're going to beat Florida. We're going to do this and that. I mean,
he didn't say down the road. He said now. Yeah. We're going to beat them now.
There's no reason. Year, yeah. Even if you can't win, there's no reason to, like, go into a game assuming you're not going to
win. All right, let me ask you this. We all played intramural basketball together, right? I wouldn't say we were the best intramural basketball team. I'd say we were a below average intramural basketball team.
Yes.
If I just went to the best team we played and just started talking as much smack as humanly possible to get them fired up, I don't think you guys would have, like, been like, yeah, Kyle, we're behind you. You'd have been like, shut the hell up. Like, we're already going to lose. Now you're going to make it so they're dunking on us and, like, just completely embarrassing us. We're turning it over every time. That's how his players are going to feel after this game. They're going to feel like Lane Kiffin just went to the biggest, baddest seven-footer at Southwest and just talked a whole bunch of mess in his face.
I might have got behind you, but I wouldn't have been on the court enough for it to matter.
There's nothing wrong with having a little swag.
Yes, there is when you're horrible.
Yeah. I think maybe Kiffin takes a little of the pressure off them because all the pressure's on him now and not the team. So if they lose, it's because Kiffin set them up.
Who are going to be getting hit and intercepted and scored on, celebrated in the face of, and
humiliated.
On the
other side of the coin, though, if Tennessee would somehow win, it would be like Armageddon. It'd be the greatest win in the history of the Tennessee program.
I pretty much agree with that. It'd be insane if they won. Absolutely insane.
So the ceiling's pretty high in this one, then.
Will Hill likes ceiling.
There is none. There is none. And we'll get into this a little bit more come Friday. We're going to do our Tennessee preview podcast / 50th episode extravaganza.
Oh, man. Made it to 50.
Yeah. And some there were doubters. Some said we would never make it. Nobody believed in us.
I remember when we started with Humble Beginnings on Adam's MacBook only. Now look at us, sitting in the back room with a microphone.
Within a 3-foot radius of one condenser microphone. Look how far we've come.
National guests on a weekly basis.
All right. So check back for that Friday. It's going to be a big show. As James Wilson has promised, it's going to be a show.
It is going to be a show for us as well.
All right. Thanks for listening.